Hi, everyone. Wayne Spencer with his wife of 45 years. Hopefully, he'll be 46. Gay Spencer. This is a special tribute program on Radio Rodeo dedicated to our good friend Jim Gurley and all of Oklahoma, where he settled and grew up. These are just some of the memories of Jimmy Lee Gurley that we remember him from here in Cheyenne, from his high school, junior high school years. And, of course, I worked with him on the police department, thanks to him getting me on the police department. But first, of course, is the condolences to Susan and the kids, and Gene and Debbie and their kids and whatnot. And we will be looking up Mutt's web page here later. But, ladies and gentlemen, we want to share our memories of Jimmy Lee Gurley. And I'm going to start off with my wife, Gaynell. He really came into her life after her and I got married, but I think she has a couple of memories she'd like to share.
Yeah, Jimmy Lee, he'd always come on Saturday morning, wanted to visit with Wayne. Well, Saturday morning was Wayne and I's day because he worked all week. So we'd sprawl out in front of our TV in the bedroom and watch Sunday morning cartoons. That was just our weekly thing. Well, pretty soon, Jimmy Lee was right in bed with us. He decided he'd have to join us if he wanted to talk to Wayne. So we'd watch Looney Tunes on Saturday morning every week.
Now, I'm going into my sports announcer mode here to paint the picture. That was our old house over on 8th Street. How big was that bedroom?
It was probably an 8x8.
And what size bed did we have in there? Refresh me.
A queen-size bed that went from wall to wall. You had to go in the doorway and jump on the bed, because there was nowhere else to go.
Is that the same bed where we bumped heads and knocked each other out one time?
Yeah. Just no room for nothing.
But I had my little portable TV up on the dresser, I believe.
Yes. Well, we had a crib for our baby in the corner. And how it ever fit there, I'll never know. But you couldn't do anything around it. That was... You had to do everything from the bed, and our son was right at the end of it.
Now, for those of people with maybe a little blue-minded, a little worried, were we on top of or underneath the covers?
Well, we'd always get under the covers because this is Wyoming. Always cold.
But where was Jimmy?
Oh, well, you'd have to get under the covers.
Well, I don't remember that. I'm going to keep the memory that he'd just jump on top of the bed. Oh. But that's the only hanky-pank was watching Bugs Bunny, Porky Pig, and those kind of guys in there. And that's the kind of friendship we had. Open to go. What was mine was welcome to Jimmy. And most of all, Jimmy was most giving to me. Now, I first met Jimmy on my first day in 9th grade. At first, we both thought each of us were, I put it in a posting to Susan and Gene. But we did that first day in 9th grade. We thought each of us, the other was a nerd, but it didn't take more than a week before we became lifelong friends, which I kind of add up, lasted about 55 years. Distance as it was, those feelings were always, always strong. The first time I met Jimmy, something was wrong in that mechanical drawing class. Somebody had moved his pencil or his ruler or his T-square or something, and he went off on a rampage. And then I thought, well, who is this guy to act like that? And so the first meeting, it's those first impressions don't really count, but soon we found our true love in life, and that was the motorcycles and the way he and I used to explore Cheyenne. One time we were talking about it, and I think Jimmy's the one that said, those were the days we were the kings, and Cheyenne, our kingdom. We rode, he started with a little Yamaha 80 trail bike, and at that time I think I had a Triumph Tiger Cub, but he would follow me around, and I'd follow him. I'd go where that bigger bike shouldn't have gone, and he'd go where that little bike had a hard time going. Until the one day he shows up at my house, and he's got a brand new Honda 250 Scrambler. And I think that was about 1964. And it was some motorcycle, believe you me. And we traveled all over Cheyenne, Laramie County. When Susan was here, and I'm going to send a postcard or try to do a postcard image, we took her out to between Cheyenne. There's Granite Lake. It's now called the Kurt Gowdy State Park. And yes, it's named after Kurt Gowdy, the famous radio sports announcer who grew up in Cheyenne. Jimmy and I were there. One day, nobody was around. It was middle of the week, no fishermen or anything. And we're riding on all the different little trails and whatnot. We ended up on a little jut out, a little peninsula of an island type thing where the dam started and made a big crescent move, blocking Granite Springs and making this big lake. And as Way will lead on to Way, we decided we had to ride down on that dam and get over to the other side of the lake. It was a shortcut. Well, how are we going to do it? We had to get down about probably a 5-foot incline to actually get on the dam. So we jumped on one of the bikes, went over to where we'd seen an outhouse door torn off of an outhouse just laying on the ground. We picked that up for a ramp. Between the two of us on the motorcycle, drove back, wedged it up against the rock and down on the dam. And I went down on the ramp first. It was spooky because, like I was saying earlier, if we fell to the right, it's about 400 foot of staggered, hand-cut granite stone piled up kind of like pyramid style. And on the left was the deep end of Granite Lake. And I know in those days and now, to me, the first thing would have been saving the motorcycle. So I would have been too dumb to let go and swim. I would have taken the while I was on the Triumph to the bottom of the lake. I got across all right. At the other end, though, it was a little tricky. You had to kind of double clutch a little bit and try to pop a wheelie, get that front wheel up, and then we got on a nice sandy beach. Now, I'm on the far side of the lake. Jimmy's still on the south side. And he's got that big Honda. Now, this is a heavy motorcycle, those Honda 250 Scramblers. He started down that ramp, and it caved in. That ramp, the panels on that old door crashed in, and Jimmy went straight down. I'm standing over there thinking, oh, no, and, you know, everything you can think of. And to his motorcycle ability, somehow he hit the gas just right when the rear wheel hit the top of that dam, dove over a couple pieces of wood. Some wood fell down the right side stones and some fell in the lake. And Jimmy came across that big bow dam in one piece, and we were able to share that with Susan. I don't know if it's the same trip. One day, he and I were up in there, and we're coming home on, like, Interstate 80 between Vita Vu, where Gene took Debbie a few years ago and their kids. but there was an off-ramp going to what they call the Remount Guest Ranch. And it's one of the typical highways, the I-80 as it goes through Wyoming. It's just a four-lane highway with a median in between, and then these on and off ramps. Well, at that location, it was a downward off ramp, and then to come up on the other side. And just riding side by side with no forewarning or anything, Jimmy takes off, goes down that on off ramp across the Remount Road, and comes back up the on ramp. Just side by side with me, like we had never split up. And I remember there was a car load of a family, mom and dad and kids, jumping around in the car. And they just happened to be on the outside lane going about the same speed I was. And when Jimmy just came right up and we met side by side like we were in a parade drill, I just remember that lady just getting excited and jumping up and down and laughing in the passenger seat of their car and rolling down her window, hollered something at us, probably called us dumb shits or something, but she was excited with our expertise in motorcyclism there. But we used to ride around Cheyenne quite a bit on the motorcycles. We knew every back alley, every vacant lot, every hideaway we could find in Cheyenne. And one night I remember we were at kind of a Lover's Lane place. There's houses built there now in North Cheyenne. We're riding around on the dirt trails and that. No other cars there. It was kind of early evening, but it was dark. And in my headlight, I saw the flash of something silver. And we went back to that point, and we turned around and went back. It was a six-pack of beer somebody had to abandon. Probably got panicky if the cops were driving through the Lover's Lane or something. But the forbidden taste of alcohol, we enjoyed after that ride. We were in about 10th grade when we did that. And our love of Coors beer was just getting fine-tuned at that time. And just trying to go down this list of different stories, I owe Jimmy a lot in life. I had had a period where I had disappeared. I ran away from home, okay? You're supposed to ask me now, well, how old were you, Wayne?
How old were you, Wayne?
When I ran away from home?
I didn't even know you then.
Well, I was the tender age of 23 when I ran away from home, and just things weren't going good for me. I jumped in my car and headed west on Interstate 80, picked up a hitchhiker, and I ended up and stayed about 6 weeks in Reno, Nevada. And Jimmy was one of the few people I would send a postcard to, and he was kind enough to update my folks. What I was trying to do was get a job in Reno and light out on my own and make something of myself. But the problem is, that's tough to do in Nevada unless you know somebody, I guess. And I couldn't get a job, and eventually I came home. And one of the first people to meet me was Jimmy. Came by the house. I don't even think he knew I was home, but he saw my car at the folks' house, and he pulled around, and he came up and talked to me, and he says, I'll be back tonight. I'll pick you up. Van and I, and that was Van Slames, the guy he worked with at the railroad, they had been studying for months to take the police exam, really serious about wanting to be police officers. Well, here I was, kind of a hippie type at the time, long hair and a Fu Manchu mustache. Not quite as heavy as I later grew up to be, but Jimmy came by, threw us the word, and took me down to where they were doing this three-hour police examination. They let me sign up and fill out the application right there, so I'm about a half hour behind him and Van as they're taking this test. It was a multiple choice thing. It had blocks A through E, I remember. Now, the big thing to entice me, because we were a little bit older at the time, was the fact that there's a bar in Cheyenne called the Green Door. And it had what we called in those days go-go girls. They would dress in like a modest bikini in today's term, and most of them had some sort of fringe that would wiggle on the top and on their bottoms, and there were no poles involved in those days. But he promised to buy me a couple of drinks after the test if I'd go with him and Van and take the test. So now these guys have been studying for months, doing study sessions. They're whipping through the test. I've got two more pages to do, but they're my ride. And the enticement of going down there to the Green Door was just more than I could handle. So the last two pages of the test, I'm confessing to the world now, I've been retired as long as I was a policeman now, I cheated. I made a perfect pattern. You know how you pick on those multiple guess tests, A, B, C, and you make the nicest picture, draw a picture of a puppy dog or your girlfriend's face or something in those answer pads. And I just went down that last two pages of that test and made the best picture I could, alternating A, B, C, D, and whatnot. Hurried up, turned in my paper, and yes, we went down there and had a couple of drinks and later went home. Now, a month or so later, the results of the police test come out. And I'm not bragging on myself. It was just divine providence. I passed the test higher than Jimmy did. And I got a lucky phone call. And the chief at the time was a man named Jim Bird. And he says, hey, you're the next one on our list. Can you be here tomorrow? Well, I couldn't be because I'd found another job. And he says, all right, I'll put the next guy in, but you be here in 2 weeks, because they'd had some guys recently quit. So I gave my boss at the time 2 weeks. I show up at the police department. About 6 months. I got on in April of 71, and I think Jimmy got on just before Christmas of 71. He was there for 7 years. He was a good policeman, and he was dedicated and presented such a perfect policeman demeanor. That means he looked like a good-looking cop. In a sharp military training, he always came to work with his shirts pressed, his pants pressed, and his brass good and shiny. He got moved up the ranks. He was the first airport security guard we had here in Cheyenne. And I know there's a couple of stories about that on the website I've been talking to you about, that you know you're from Cheyenne if you remember. It's a Facebook thing. A lot of people from Cheyenne here are putting tributes to Jimmy on that. Then he was the first one to be our crime prevention officer going to that crime school, and most police departments have it now, that silent witness program. And he brought that back to Cheyenne and did a fine job with that and for 7 years. And then circumstances came where he thought it was better to get back down to Ada and be with his mom and dad. And I think Brother Gene, about the time he went back, was just in high school in there. And there had been some time when Jimmy had been with those folks, I think, just before he went to the Army. I used to get all kinds of letters from Jimmy. I'd get one every 7 to 10 days from Jimmy while he was in the Army. One letter I remember in particular, he would was stationed at Fort Eustis, Washington, which I guess is a big army base near Washington, D.C., and they had those big riots in the street back there. And they activated cops from all over and National Guard and regular troops like Jimmy was at the time. But he put in detail a letter about a confrontation he had with one of those protesters breaking out a basement window and getting in there. And I'm hoping to find that letter. I have a trunk of my childhood memories buried under a pile of trash out in my garage. And I'm going to try to find it, so maybe I can get a copy of that down there to Susan, the kids, or to Brother Gene. Another memory thing. Of course, all you folks have more memories than, you know, they got to come out with the movie of This Is Jimmy or something, because you know there is more going on with Jimmy Gurley and his pranks than Hollywood could dream up. Tell you the truth. Now, one of the pranks I remember well with Jimmy was the time there had been reports of a ghost in our cemetery in Cheyenne. The main cemetery is divided in two by Pershing Boulevard. And you can, it's still that way today. Gene probably remembers it. And it was haunted at one time. And the ghost that did it was a guy named Jimmy Lee Gurley. Again, his mama had to make him another costume. She was always in on his pranks. That sweet lady was in on more pranks with her sewing ability than anything else. But she made him the best ghost costume you ever saw. Not just a sheet with holes in it. I mean, it had like a cape to it, and it was something to, without any political intent here, a Ku Klux Klan guy never had a better uniform than Jimmy had. And what he would do, and I know Ricky Honeycutt was a good friend of his, they would take him up to the cemetery and park, and Jimmy would be going running around the cemetery in a ghost costume and jumping from the bigger tombstones to other ones and just trying to scare people as they drove past the cemetery. And I'm just sure there had to be reports, because the people that took him and dropped him off would sit back and kind of watch. But again, you folks I know have enjoyed some of his pranks like that. Again, like I say, they're going to waste, so we should be making a movie about this life of him and everybody he affected. And I'm helping Gay adjust something here. What are you doing, hon? Oh, well, now this is down home, folks. I'm giving Gay a bite of a chicken leg. I get to talk, and she has to fight for food. For those of you who don't know, Gay, Jimmy is my dear friend, and Gay is my hero. She has multiple sclerosis, and as such, slowly, she's been confined to a wheelchair. But she sits in our little office room here, where I've got pictures of, I got a picture of Lane Frost with Charlie Sampson's kid on his lap, right at the moment that Lane Frost, after the rodeo there to finals, was declared the champion. I got a picture of him taken the year before he died in the arena here in Cheyenne. And I was there present the day he died, and I escorted the ambulance in my police car to the hospital with him. Just saying this so you know how much rodeo means to me. I was never a rodeo cowboy. I was just the world's biggest rodeo fan, and I can say that with absolute truth, because at the time I weighed about 300 pounds. Gay and I traveled around everywhere, to Mesquite, Texas, the furthest south, to to Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and we were part at one time with the Rodeo 88 there at the Olympics. We have a lot of memorabilia around here, and somewhere I have a picture of Jimmy in the high school picture he signed for me. So getting back to Jimmy and Frontier Days, high school, I remember this. And this is for you older folks to enjoy, maybe, or not enjoy, but to understand. We were in high school the year that Cheyenne Frontier Days is, what, in their 120th year this year or something? But we were in 10th or 11th grade with the year it was the 69th annual Cheyenne Frontier Days. And I know for a while there was one of those big hand-painted banners in Jimmy's bedroom over there on Andover where him and Jean lived with the folks in Cheyenne. There was something about the number 69 that intrigued Jimmy, and that's all I'm going to say on that point in there. One time I had been, Gay and I and our son had been to California. Our boy was just a baby, about 2 years old. So this is about 73, 75, somewhere in there. He went, we were flying home from California, and Continental Airlines used to have a thing called the pub. And you could get up from your airplane seat, and right in the middle of the airplane was a little cocktail lounge they called the pub. Gay's fighting with a baby. There's this three seats in the row, and poor lady on the outside row, she's trying to read her book, and Gay's fighting with a two-year-old being fussy. So I excused myself. I sacrificed myself. Would you say I was a sacrifice, Gay?
When you were sacrificed, all right.
So I go up to the pub, and wouldn't you know it, there's a big shot from Continental Airlines. And while you're in the pub and there's a big shot from Continental Airlines, maybe that's why they're not around now. You couldn't buy a drink. They just gave you what you wanted. And it appeared nobody was counting how many you had either. Go to land in Denver. We just had to land in Denver, but we stayed on the same plane, and they brought it up to Cheyenne. By the time I got back to my seat in Denver, I was really inebriated. That poor lady reading the book was too bad. But the point of the story is, when the plane got here in Cheyenne, I'm getting off the airplane. Jimmy is the airport cop at the bottom of the staircase, the way they did it in those days. And I'm carrying the diaper bag, and I got a teddy bear. And Jimmy's sitting.
Something that you could drop and hurt.
Yeah. So, Jimmy, I'm at the top of the ramp, getting off the airplane, Jimmy's down at the bottom, and kaboom, I pitched that teddy bear at him, and I hit him. And, of course, instead of shooting me, I'm lucky he just, because nowadays, think of that, you get off an airplane, you hit the security cop with a teddy bear, man, you got lots of explaining to do there, Lucy. But right there in front of all those people, Jimmy picks up that teddy bear, and boom, throws it right back and hits me as I'm walking down the steps. Just one of those impromptu things at that time. Cops, they didn't dare put him and I together too often in the same squad car, but a few times they did. And Jimmy helped me. I may have been on there 6 months before, but riding with Jimmy and in those patrol cars, my gosh, I learned a few things from him that none of the older guys showed me, such as, hey, you got a report to ride, pull off to a side street somewhere and ride it, then you ain't staying after work too long and having to do it. Bad language, but so after riding with Jimmy, after he got broke in and was on his own, that was my course when I was in uniform. Later, I was promoted to a detective, and I spent a long time in the detective bureau, but my on-to-on contact with Jimmy was kind of limited at work then because he stayed in uniform and in patrol. But we would visit each other. We were the first ones to use an old locker room they had at the basement of the old police station. And it had a shower and that, and they had some old lockers they had gotten surplus from the base here. And we were some of the first, I know Jimmy was first. We used to wear our civvies to work and then get dressed at work. And particularly if you're on the swing shift, you want to get out of that uniform as fast as you can. On midnight, you want to get home as fast as you can. And those times are another story. But found the trick was to get home and get to sleep before the sun got too high, and you could sleep better during the day in there. Then there for a while, and Jimmy lived down the street from us. And I think that was probably the period when he used to come and flop on the bed, and we'd watch cartoons if we were on Saturday mornings together. And, hey, we were young enough to enjoy them, and they were funny cartoons. Bugs Bunny and the Three Pigs and things like that. And Roadrunner. Roadrunner was big in those days, too, wasn't it, Gay?
Tom and Jerry, it was just, they were great cartoons.
One time, and I got to quit using that all the time, but Jim and I snuck down to Colorado. We were in about 10th grade, and I don't know if we were in that beautiful, what was it, a 61 Chevy your folks had there, Gene, that two-door. I know I had a 348, a two-door hardtop. Elva, he loved classic cars. And they had bought it brand new, and Jimmy got to drive it sometimes instead of the old truck. I think we snuck down to Colorado, and we bought a six-pack of Coors beer in the bottles. And for you trivia experts, in those days, Coors beer in a brown bottle was an 11-ounce for a bottle of beer. And they didn't have the twist caps. And Jim and I learned how to pop a cap off without a church key or a can opener, as you would say. And that was a trick that I know I used over the years. But we sat down behind the rocks at the, what they called the rest stop on I-80 or I-25, just south of Cheyenne. Sandstone, limestone, rocks, kind of a castle type thing, a lot of history there. Indian battles, Indian against Indian kind of battles happened there. Settlers would run to this natural fort to set up protection from Indian attacks. A lot of history there. And then it was dedicated. After World War II, it was one of those memorials to our troops who fought for and gave us our life that this generation that Jimmy and I and Gene and Susan, everybody's in, you know, we're part of that. What those greatest generation people went to do. And then it just takes a couple of punks like me and Jimmy to sit down there by that monument, get behind one of those sand pillars and hide from the world because we're underage and drink a little bit of that Coors beer. And then this particular day, we made a monument. We liked that Coors beer so much. We made a monument to the Coors people, digging into that sandstone and piling our beer bottles up. And I think we scratched our names in on that sandstone, right kind of along where the people that fought Indians did and the people that had climbed around them over the years had. And a lot of times when I'm driving down there, I think of that. And right south of there was what we called the Shamrock. Shamrock was a log cabin, only sold 3-2 beer. And once you two got to be about 16 and lived in Cheyenne, you could pass for an 18-year-old and buy beer. And all of us Cheyenne kids used to go down there, the jukebox. God, we'd play Otis Redding songs and Tammy Wynette and different things. But getting back to the outhouse up there at the dam, and that segues me to the outhouse there at the Shamrock Log Cabin Bar. There was a particular girl at school that Jim and every other young guy had the eye or admiration for, or whatever you want to say. When we picked up that door to take it over to the dam to use as our ramp, somebody, and again, this is in the days before text messaging, so you had to write something in 140 characters or less. You would do it on a bathroom door. This particular door, somebody had written something about this lady. And, of course, Jim and I giggled and everything. And there wasn't a day or time go past when we would see her in the hallways of the school or running around in a classic hot rod with her boyfriend, whom she later married, that we didn't think of what we read on the bathroom wall. One of you guys that are musical put a song together about the notes on the bathroom wall at the old outhouse. At the Shamrock, Bill Peasley and he couldn't join me here this afternoon for this. He wanted to try to, but obligations kept him away. Bill Peasley and I, for the 30th class reunion, and Gay went down to that place. It's on a private ranch now. It's closed. The building's falling in for lack of care, but that outhouse there, it was a two-holer. One marked boys, the other marked girls. And I don't know how, but there was a message about Wayne Spencer, I know, written on the wall of the girls' bathroom. And it wasn't very flattering either, Gay. Did you write that?
No, I didn't read it either.
And
I never got to go there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were a goody two-shoes. I forgot.
No, I was younger than you. You guys were older. I wasn't.
Well, you make it sound like you were a child bride. We were a class of 66. You're the class of 68. You aren't that much younger unless you were 12 when you graduated.
Well, hey, I went to school in Burns. We weren't worldly.
Oh. No, they weren't. Burns is a little town about 20 miles east of Cheyenne, right off of I-80. A lot of agricultural business going on there. Well, anyway, a lot of messages still in that wall, and I have often thought we need to get a hold of the people that own the property now, and I know the two of the guys that do it. Maybe there's not enough of us old-timers around, but maybe I'll talk to Peasley. Maybe we can get volunteer to tear that outhouse down and bring it up to the 50th reunion this August. They're not all nasty messages. There's some words of wisdom and words of wit written on those bathroom walls, all in the days before we had to text and all the kids had neck problems from looking at their devices all the time. A lot of good trips down there with Jimmy. One time we were going to have a party here in Cheyenne. And I finally turned 18. When I was a senior in high school, I didn't have to lie. I could go down there, and I had a order to supply the beer for a house party here. And believe me, we'd get two cases of beer and share it with about 100 people. And that's all we needed, just the thrill and the taste and the guilt of experiencing something you shouldn't be experiencing, I guess. Jimmy and I drove down there right after school with all this money to buy a couple free cases of beer. And this place, out in the middle of nowhere, had a drive-up window and a little about 6 to 8 seat bar and a small dance floor and the jukebox and that, what do you call them, Bucky Games, Gay? Shuffleboard. In there. So we drive up to the window. We were in my dad's car and pull up to the window. And as I'm sitting there waiting for the guy that ran the place to open up the drive-up window, about a 1964, 65 green four-door Rambler comes up the road. It was on an old frontage road. And the kid's going pretty fast, and he tries to turn into this dirt parking lot, and he rolls the car into the bar pit in front of that made this a circular driveway. And I tell Jimmy, hey, a car just rolled into there, and you couldn't see it. It was bar pit was deep. And I told the guy that ran the place, I said, hey, Garce, car just went off the road. He's in the bar pit in front of your thing. And, of course, Gar says, Spencer, you're drinking already. Because he looked out the window. He didn't see anything. Well, lo and behold, by the time I get Jimmy out of the car and we get ready to walk over there, here come two kids, 15, 16-year-old boys, crawling out of that ditch on their bellies up into the weeds in that gravel pit there. And they had overcome the temptation of mom and dad being out of town, and one of them stole the car keys, and they went for a joyride. And I think the kid driving had a beginner's permit, if I remember, but you had to have a licensed driver, and the kid riding shotgun with him that went over in the Rambler. That kid didn't have a driver's license. So what do we do? Well, lo and behold, a couple of guys older than Jimmy and I showed up, and somebody had a pickup truck, and we found a chain, and we hooked onto the car and just kind of pulled it on its side. And then with a bunch of other people as they came, we got about, 20 guys finally showing up there, starting to come for the night. We got that car back on all four. And one of the older guys had been around. He went in and got a broom and a dustpan and a box, and he started picking up broken window glass and stuff, put in that box and put it in there with those kids. Now, I couldn't tow him. I had my dad's good 63 Chevy, no tow bar or anything, but some other guys drove him into town. Then I learned a day or two later that what they did, they went up here to this Lions Park, Lake Apsaraka, and where the country club is in Cheyenne, where the highbrow people hang out. There was a curve if you came up on the frontage road. And in those days, they did not have a good metal guard on it. They had a post and cables. And those guys took that car, pushed it off that thing, rolled it into the lake. The two boys who had borrowed mom and daddy's car were at home when they called the police and reported it as stolen. They held up with the scrutiny and whatnot. They pulled that off. So, again, nobody got hurt. And a couple kids probably years later fessed to their folks what happened to that nice green Rambler. You know, those Ramblers were kind of coveted car in those days, because that was the first car where you had a tilt seat and you could put the back of the seat up against the front seat would fold down like a recliner and make a perfect bed there with the back seat. The old drive-in theater here. Certain guys always thought they would want to borrow mom's Rambler to go to the drive-in movie with their girlfriend. But that's a story for another time. Police calls. When I backed up Jimmy on a police call one time, and at this time, Jimmy was single. And like I said, in his uniform, he cut a dashing figure. And he had that Oklahoma wit and that Oklahoma savvy about him. And this was a case where a lady gotten bit by the neighbor's dog, and she'd gotten bit on her inside thigh, 6-8 inches above her knee. She's wearing a skirt. And it was I was the rover car. It was our job to drive by when there was one cop out at a house to make sure everything was all right. So I drove up to back him up. And he's taking the report, getting the description of the dog and everything. And lady says, well, where did it bite you? And she points the point on her leg, on the outside of her skirt and all that. And, you know, for 99 out of 100 of us, that would have been it on the report. Dog bite inside thigh. But not Jimmy. He was a thorough investigator. He had to see that dog bite so maybe he could draw a picture of it or something. You know, you have to have that forensic evidence. And when I get in there, he's telling the lady, well, ma'am, I've got to see it. Oh, I am so, no, I, you know, back and forth. She didn't want to show him his leg or whatnot. And he silver-tongued her into it. And I know he drew a picture of that dog bite on the police report. Just that power of persuasion. And forgive me, folks, I am fighting a cold and a sore throat. I usually boom out with my God gift of my voice, but today it's dragging in there. But that was a good call with Jimmy in there. A lot of different pranks, but he got into the administrative side with being the airport guard and with being in that crime prevention. And I know there was some jealousy of some of the other rank-and-file cops. You know, people are always jealous, or what do we say out here in Wyoming? Maybe you say that in Oklahoma. Everybody thinks the grass is greener on the other side of the street, and they all thought that Jimmy was maybe the teacher's pet or the chief's pet. And it caused him some personality problems on the department, but thank goodness we were able to, our friendship would be together, intact. I do apologize, and I address that. There was that bad time just before he went to Oklahoma. He came back, and I ran into each other by mistake or by happenstance here. And I was just scared to give him a ride in a police car. I was fearful of what the other people would see if they saw Jimmy riding shotgun with me in the car. So I always felt bad about that. And years ago on a phone call, I shared that remorse with Jimmy. And, you know, the kindness of his heart and the man and the belief he had in the Lord, he forgave me and said he understood. And that's the unique, that's the tribute to Jimmy. He maybe had a little devilish pranks in him, but he did have a trust in the Lord and a very, very forgiving heart. And I think that's, to me, is his legacy. Again, Susan, I hope you can take us with a grain of salt, because it's going to sound worse than what it was. Summer is coming to an end. Jimmy and I are just finishing, getting ready to have our senior year in high school. And it's about the week after Frontier Day, so it's about the first week in August. And him and I were at McDonald's having a Sans burger. Only the McDonald's in Cheyenne had a Sans burger, and you had to wash it down with a Coors. That was a double cheeseburger or a single with extra onion, four pickles, extra mustard, and pepper on it. And my, oh my, I long for the days to have a good one like that again and have a bottle of Coors beer with Jimmy. But we're there having just the sandwich only, not the beer. And here comes a girl that we knew from high school. And she's got her little brother and sister with him. She runs them into McDonald's. They come out, and I'm driving. Jimmy's riding shotgun, and the two of them are talking, and he asked her out for a date. And she says, well, you know, I've been grounded all summer, but I'm not grounded anymore. And you call me later at home, and I'll make sure with my parents that we can go out. And in those days, a date in Cheyenne was maybe going to the movie for 35 cents and each, having a popcorn and having a Coke. You could do all of this for less than a buck and a half. So they had that kind of a date, but Jimmy calls and she says, well, my mom says we could only go out on a double date. Well, I had a girlfriend, and I had a 55 Chevy. It was my dad's. It was a four-door. How are we going to do this? Jimmy had his mom and dad's nice 61, 62 Chevy. Gene will have to set me straight on that. But he couldn't go pick her up by himself because Mama said that she had to meet everybody on this double date. So we arrange a scam. Maybe that's why we were good cops, Jimmy. We knew the scams. You know, the best way to catch a crook is to think like a crook or be a rehab crook. I don't know. We pull up at this girl's house. It had kind of a steep driveway. It was in the Sun Valley area of Cheyenne. My girlfriend and I and Jimmy, we all walk in the house, and we're doing the nice meeting you. Nice to meet you, Mrs. I'll just say the names was Smith right now. And Mr. Smith and whatnot. And of course, we all leave to go to the car. We're going to a movie and have permission to go to the Owl Inn and have a hot chocolate or a cherry Coke after the movie. But you have her home here by midnight and not a minute after. And we've all did that, and that was the attitude in the 60s, and by gosh, a lot of people followed it. But not old Wayno or Gene, Jimmy Lee Gurley. We had a plan, Sam. We left in the 55 Chevy, drove a few blocks away. Jimmy and this girl get in his car. We have plans to meet at the Owl Inn about 11 o'clock. My girlfriend and I just went to a regular movie popcorn Coke date. But Jimmy did stop and see our friends where we worked together as busboys at the Plains Hotel. And there was one guy there, I can't remember his name, but we called him the Mooch because we'd go mooch him out of getting us a six-pack of beer. Because I guess the girl had said she had never tasted the fruits of alcohol and was kind of inquisitive. So we get this, Jimmy gets that six pack and they drive off on their date and they get way out in the country because you had to get away from people if you're underage with that beer. And they're up in that area around Vidavu, someplace like that, about 20 miles out of Cheyenne along I-80. And they have their beer, and they didn't drink all of it. Well, my girlfriend and I, we're waiting to meet them at the Owl Inn so we can all pack into my car and take her home. And it's getting late. It's getting late, and it's about 11:45. Finally, Jimmy pulls up and parks over there at the old dairy that was there, and I pull up, and he's got a problem. This young lady is highly intoxicated. And nothing, believe me, nothing that shouldn't have happened physically happened. But this girl, with her first taste of alcohol, decided she must have been too hot or something because she took her skirt and her top off. And Jimmy, as he told me the story, maybe he told Susan the story, but he says, I had a heck of a fight getting her back into her clothes and everything and getting her in the car. She's running around the prairie. I had to chase her. And boom, we got to hurry up and get her home. So they load up in the car, and I think we got some coffee. We're pouring hot coffee in this girl as we're driving on the bumpy streets of Cheyenne. We pull up into her driveway, up onto the slanted driveway, and being the gentleman that Jimmy was, he walked her to the door, and as he got to the door opened, and it was that young lady's mother. Our plan, and we rehearsed it with the girl, was you go in and just go down the hallway and go to your bedroom. Jimmy, you say goodnight and come out, because we were good for planning the details. Next thing I know, Jimmy, the front door opens up, Jimmy blasts out. He opens the car to the 55 Chevy and says, get the hell out of here. Get going. And I popped her in reverse and drove down this highway, drug the bumper of the car into the street, and we took off. And I said, Jimmy, what went wrong in the house? And he says, She's going down the hallway, said goodnight to her mom, and her mom looked at her, and her skirt was on inside out. So just kind of picture that. Jimmy never had another date with this girl. This girl grew up to be a school teacher and raised a fine family, and I know she'll be here for the reunion in August. She's on the website, logging in to do it. But the next time she got to go on a date was Christmas vacation, and it wasn't with Jimmy Gurley, I'll tell you that right now. It was somebody else in there. So that's just another example of the mischievous stuff that the kids here at Cheyenne, Wyoming would think of. And I think in the 60s, us being the products, like I said, of those guys who went to World War II, not for themselves or for hate, but to save this country for our friends. We're the baby boomers and what we could do here. What's that, Gay? And Gay's getting tired, so I got to wrap this up. One other thing I want to share with everybody, you know his love of Corvettes. He had the first Corvette that I ever got to drive. I got to ride with him and a neighbor kid, Jimmy Boggs' Corvette, but couldn't drive it. My dad traded the 55 Chevy in for a 56 Chevy, and it was quite a car, Gene. You would have loved it. Maybe you remember it. It's the one I drove to Bankford High School as a senior. 56 Chevy, four-door, yellow and brown. Had the bumper. At one time, it had a Continental kit, which I usually put on the two doors. Didn't have the Continental kit anymore. But it had a sun visor. Had fender skirts. And when it's my turn to drive, I'd pick Jimmy up with it, and he couldn't take it. This is just a mom and dad sedan. One day he comes over to the house. He's got a set of hubcaps he had traded something for. He was always good at finding somebody that wanted something and trading, and in his estimating, trading up. He came over with four Corvette hubcaps with the two-bar spinner on them. And we popped the trunk on the car, got the tire iron out, and popped off the old Chevy hubcaps. And Jimmy put those Corvette hubcaps on there. And they were on there for over a year. The only 56 Chevy four-door with Corvette hubcaps until Jimmy found a better trade somewhere. And one day we had to share them and give them back to Jimmy, is what I'm trying to say. But most of all, Jimmy got me two jobs, one at the Plains Hotel, one where we planted grass for McIntyre's Garden Center. And ironically, that's one of the places, and there's still grass there, that Jimmy and I planted together at the building where I work in Cheyenne at the Wyoming Game and Fish now. That's where him and Susan came and surprised us, and we spent a couple of really nice days together when they were here in Cheyenne. The other job he got me was, of course, at the police department with his insistence. I got him a job at the Plains Hotel, and there's a whole book there about working at the Plains Hotel where he and I were the only two Caucasian white bus boys. The rest of them were of our Hispanic culture, Filipino culture, African Americans, and boy, did they take these two wide-eyed, naive guys and not just teach us the wrong things of life, but taught us how to get along with people and how your work spoke for you. So remember that, kids. Then, but he got to be really good friends with Paul Smith, who was the owner and CEO of the Hitching Post Hotel. And they got to be really, really good friends. And Jimmy had a lot of exposure with a rich man like that that you wouldn't normally have. I worked for him. I was the bouncer there, and that's where all the cowboys used to come for Frontier Days. And that's what got me into making friends with them, and some of the big shots got me into the rodeo announcing and took me under their wing. God, I'm having a tough time talking here when I think about Jimmy. But I owe that to him, because with that, my wife and I, and that was my hobby, that was my stress reliever from the police department, is to go announce a rodeo. Traveled all over Nebraska, Wyoming, Colorado. We had opportunities in Calgary, Alberta, Canada. I've been doing radio work for 20-some years at Cheyenne Frontier Days on local radio stations with my knowledge of that. I want everybody to know about BBSradio.com, good radio station. They carry me in the rodeo. I'm coming back with them with rodeo reports. Good day, happy trails to you, and may those trails bring you back to BBS Radio and Wayne Spencer. Good day, everybody in Oklahoma.